Ladies and gentlemen, 63 is the country code for the Philippines. A six-time Pro Bowler and the longtime executive director of the NFLPA, Gene Upshaw, is widely considered to be the greatest athlete to ever wear number 63. Stoner 63 is the name of a machine gun and will be Chris Tidwell's nickname in the year 2033. When a donkey and a horse make sexy time, they have a baby. It's called a mule. And a mule has only 63 chromosomes. And this is the 63rd installment of the Godfathers of Podcasting. And for the first time ever, we are broadcasting live on Instagram. Bear with us if there are glitches. We're trying to figure this shit out. If you're listening to an archive of this show, make sure you follow us on IG at Godfathers of Podcasting so you can catch us the next time we go on live. Godfathersofpodcasting.com is the exclusive home for all the free video archives of each one of our episodes. Make sure you go to our website and check those out. Somebody sent me an email the other day and said, oh, I love your show. I listen every week on Spotify, but I don't check the videos because I don't want to pay extra. We don't charge extra for videos. Maybe we should, but as of today, we don't. So go to godfathersofpodcasting.com and watch all that content we should probably be charging money for. When you're on our site, enjoying our free content, make sure you pick out some merchandise. Go to our shop, tees, tanks, hoodies, bags, whatever you want. We got it all there. Support your boys. Good evening, everyone. It's a muggy night here in Toronto. It's July 27th, 2021. My name is Donnie Da Silva. It's my pleasure to introduce to you the stars of the program, the horse and donkey to my stubborn mule, Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell and your bro, Danny O.
Yeah.
I guess you're claiming the donkey role.
100%.
Damn, what's a mule sound?
Right? What is it? One of them is like the half breed of a horse and a mule or something like that.
You got an issue with half breeds, bro?
No, I'm just saying what it is. I have no issue. I love it.
Oh, okay. Hey, man, big shouts to the Philippines. I got a whole lot of Filipino family out there, and they just got their first ever Olympic gold medal, the women's weightlifting. And you mentioned it off. It was in women's weightlifting.
Okay.
Yeah. Didn't know about this whole 63 code thing. You reminded me, Don. But, yo, shouts to all my Filipinos.
So I'm
six
just
and three. That's nine, though. That's really close to 10, but not quite there, right?
No, it's close. It's close.
Yeah.
Next week.
I'm seeing what you boys were talking about earlier, that we are broadcasting live on Instagram, but the video
Dan is.
Yeah, I'm live on Instagram. You guys are.
The video is chopped up, man. We got to figure out how to fix that. We will work on that between now and next week, but y'all can hear us and sort of see us. I don't know. Maybe it'll get better when our guest joins a little bit later on. Guys, it's been a few days since our last episode. All kinds of stuff has been going on in the world. Before our guest joins us, I want to touch base on a few things. First of all, over the last, 10, 12 years, it's been no secret, Olympic Village, and we are in Olympic season right now, Olympic Village has resembled something out of Caligula. It's a total orgy of athletes releasing stress with other finely tuned athletes. And the Olympic organizers apparently said, okay, that's enough. No more. We're not going to have any more orgies at the Olympic Village. So they installed anti-sex beds into the village.
Well, did they though?
They did. I've seen them, anti-sex beds. They are apparently made from cardboard and will collapse if you try to have sex on them.
Okay. Dumbest idea ever, because Olympians are competitors. And if I was in the Olympic Village, I'd be like, you know how many beds I can bust, Bridget? And you start going on it becomes a game. It's a bud best game. Bed bus game. And then you start giving out medals for how many beds you bust. Listen, there's a lot of ways to blaze without beds. I don't know if that's going to work, especially among those who are about competition. I know dudes be breaking beds on purpose. It ain't no thing.
I can mash up more beds than you.
Right.
Here's the more important question.
I get the gold dust, Bridget.
What's the important question, Tid?
Is there videos?
That's a great question. I'm sure someone's streaming it somewhere and it's not cropped like ours is on
IG. They're not even close. Like, think about it, because like, this isn't new. This happens every time at the Olympics. This has been going on. Like, there's been like, you know, the news reports of all the amounts of condoms that are given out to the Olympic athletes over the years. And I mean, like, what was it in Rio? in 2016 or something like that, 450,000 condoms given out just to the athletes. Like,
I know. Here's the thing. I just saw a story.
This is not. Oh my God, we're talking about young, 20-year-old fucking toned ass athletes
in the best shape of their life. I know. And here's the funny thing: the Olympic organizers installed anti-sex beds, but they've handed out 160,000 condoms this week.
Yeah. What does that tell?
Did they install anti-sex sinks? Anti-sex bathtubs, anti-sex showers, anti-sex.
Apparently, apparently the hot tub is the place to be.
Word.
There was a quote
because it kills sperm.
There was a quote from a former Olympic athlete.
Win-win.
There was a quote from a former Olympic athlete that said, "In the 2 weeks I spent in the Olympic Village, I had more sex than I did the entire rest of my life."
Oh my God, bro!
Right?
Try and do that. Try and do that math. How does that work? Like, how busy would you have to be during that 2 week span? Do you have time to compete?
Or not busy the rest of the time so that, right. You know what I mean? The number gets so big, right?
Right.
I'm just thinking if Olympic athletes are so into blazing during their time in the Olympic Village, that has got to do something for their performance, man. Everybody's been worried about drugs and all this stuff, all this time, steroids, whatever. Maybe blazing does give you, you know, some kind of advantage. Because, you know, when you're in like college, they say, you know, don't blaze during the season and stuff because it's going to take away from your game. I think the opposite is true. I think you're so hype us playing who can run the most tings in the Olympic Village that it gives you extra energy, extra strength, extra power. And that's what the Olympians need to win their medals. That's my theory, and I'm sticking with it.
All right. So we've all seen like some of these athletes that are competing this year. And we've seen, like, it's easy to look up. Y'all can look it up right now. Like the top, you know, 25 hottest athletes at the Tokyo Olympics this year. Right. Mm-hmm. Have you been following any of these athletes at all so far this in the Olympics?
I don't know which ones are on that
list. Because here's my question for you. Who do you pick? Who's out of your mix? You know what I mean? As those athletes that you would be like, yo, I'm going to make, like, you know, as an athlete, you're going to the Olympics and you're saying to yourself, I'm going to make it a point to try to introduce and try to get some time with this person. You know what I mean? While I'm there, like who's on your list?
Bro, I don't know if it's because it's a pandemic Olympics. I don't know what it is, but I have zero Olympic fever this year. It's the first time in my life I can remember not watching the opening ceremonies.
Right.
I haven't watched anything other than Team USA lose to France. Right. That's the only thing I've watched.
Looking forward to them not winning the gold. You're talking about basketball, of course.
Correct. And the way that they played, I think that Team USA used all 160,000 of those condoms.
So your pick is a basketball player.
Because those are the dudes who can get the most pussy in the Olympic Village, bro. They're millionaires. They're superstars. Bro, you think them dudes didn't go to the Olympics saying, guy, I got to bet. They're already betting hundreds of G's on who can run the most. They're giving out gold, bronze, silver for who blazes the most. They have their own Olympic games going on. They're not worried about ball.
Is Kevin Durant on the hookup podium?
He's guy. I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is.
Wow.
Very interesting indeed. We'd like to hear from all of you out there. Who do you think is the best looking Olympic athlete that you wish that you were stuck with in the Olympic Village?
I don't know who's on that list or, you know, which athletes to choose from. But for real, though, is Olympic Village like the Vegas of every 4 years? Like what happens there? Because
it's worse than Vegas. You know what it is? It's Roppongi. It's the Roppongi Japan of all athletic competition.
But it can't be just athletes, man. Like there's got to be something to the Olympics that make people want to. If there's that much blazing going on, you're telling me that all Olympians.
They're all
straight
young.
Hoeing it up They're every 4 years.
They're all young. They're all in great shape. They've all got supreme amount of stress that they want to release. Mm-hmm. You know, most of the athletes that have been interviewed about this have said, we don't hook up until after our event is done.
Yeah. But you're never going to catch bigger ropes than you will off of an Olympic athlete after he's done competing. And that's what some of these chicks are hoping for sure. Wow. Right. Right. Wow. Plus the possibility of, like, you know, maybe one of those 450,000 like love gloves has a hole in it. And you end up with like some, you know, perfect child for the Olympics in the next 16 years. Like, come on. It's going to happen.
Listen, I just want to shout out 620 some odd people watching us live, even though we're cropped to shit. Thanks for hanging with us and at least listening to us on the live video broadcast.
This is the most shit we've talked in a long time, too.
Yeah, we're just talking a lot of shit, but that's what's going on. Speaking of talking shit, before we get to our guest, I want to throw this out there. For weeks, Dan and I in particular were excited about this. And I could not help but take it all in, all five episodes when it dropped last Friday. Masters of the Universe Revelation, written and directed by one of my favorite directors, Kevin Smith. It dropped last Friday on Netflix, five episodes plus an after show. It is star-studded with voiceover talent. Mark Hamill, Kevin Conroy, Jason Mewes. There is just one big name after another. There's a couple of big name actors from Game of Thrones. It is just loaded with talent. I was shocked at how much I liked it. Like, I thought I was going to watch it just from the perspective of, hey, it's good nostalgia. Feel good. It's stuff from my childhood. It's fucking phenomenal. Wow. And here's the thing. The story that I really want to touch on is, if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, you know, one of the most popular movie review sites in the world.
Right.
This show, Masters of the Universe Revelations, is currently at, as of right now, 95% fresh by critics, 34% by the average audience. So fans hate the show. Critics think it's a masterpiece. And I think this comes down to what we talked about a few weeks ago. Right. People don't like change. When you take established properties and you make them behave differently, people get really bent out of shape. There's been all kinds of anger about the fact that, you know, Teela has been put into this like center role, even ahead of He-Man. But then I saw Kevin Smith talking on his podcast. He's like, everyone's freaking out thinking that Teela's going to be the new Master of the Universe. Let me just give you a spoiler, everybody. She never holds the sword of power and she never becomes He-Man. Okay. Let's just get that out of your system and just forget it. She's just an important character and always was. And I'm like, you know what? It sucks that he has to apologize for this shit. It sucks that he has to justify it, but that's the world right now, right?
People say that was one of the worst Kevin Smith's impersonations that I've ever heard in my entire life.
It was a little bit too much Bret Hart in that impersonation.
Yeah, like you went through the spectrum of these are all the wrestler voices that I know.
I also talked to Kevin Smith for 15 seconds and never once mentioned I had a heart attack.
Hopefully it was the 15. Yeah, it was 15 seconds right after he died.
Yeah. You know, I find it amazing that the people who are not concerned about real life issues, like real things that are really impacting the world, are super concerned about this new animated series and how close or not close it is to the series they watched as kids. It's amazing what people have time for. It's amazing what people have energy, like negative energy to waste on.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. It's negative energy.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith was talking and he goes, you know, all these people are complaining. They're tweeting me and stuff and saying, I can't believe Kevin Smith got control of the Masters of the Universe franchise and he just decides to go in and start killing main characters. And Kevin Smith is like, guys, have you never watched a movie or TV show ever?
Right.
Like, do you think I went to Mattel and said, hey, all these popular figures that have been around for 30 years, I'm going to kill them. He's like, resurrections happen in this world. Right. It's just the way it is. Like, calm your fucking asses and wait for part two.
Yeah, motherfuckers want to hold funerals and stuff because a cartoon character is gone. But they don't. But they ain't mad when someone for real is getting shot by the. Let me not even go there.
Yeah, don't. You're gonna get all fired up.
This is when art does not imitate life because life is too damn dark. Oh, right. Man. I watched. So here's the thing. I watched the first episode of it.
Yeah. What'd you think?
Because I haven't had a chance to watch the rest of them yet, but I did watch the first episode of it.
And you're not a fan of the original franchise.
Well, because I was already an adult getting laid at the time that you guys were watching that stuff. Oh. Like, let's be perfectly honest here. Right. Oh, man. But I understood it. I get it. I, you know, and here's, as I watched the new one, I was like, okay, the animation is different. You know, slightly, I get that it's supposed to be. The story is a little bit up to what today's life. You know what I mean? You can definitely tell it's a rewrite. You can definitely tell they were taking the characters and going in a different direction. But I mean, I'm willing to give it the chance to see what's going to happen. We live in this world where shows have created. Remember when you were also a kid, and if you liked that He-Man, you didn't know what the fuck a multiverse was.
Right.
You didn't, you know, and this is the world that we live in now. We're like possibilities from these people's, these geniuses' minds have been able to, you know, write these stories, you know what I mean? To draw you in, but using these characters that you can relate to. So let's give it a chance. I'm all for it. Sure. Yeah, why not?
I think the problem with a lot of fans is that
you get high and you watch it. It's great.
Yeah, that you can do that now, because when you were a kid, you weren't able to get high. And I think people are so attached to the nostalgia of how they felt. You cannot replicate a feeling that you had when you were 8 or 12. You know what I'm saying? Like you're a grown ass man, supposedly, watching this now. It's going to impact you differently. You know what I'm saying?
You will never get as high as you did the first time. And that doesn't necessarily mean drugs or anything like that. It's an emotional, it's a love. It's a, you know what I mean? That adrenaline, you're never going to get as high as that first time, but we spend our lives chasing it.
Right.
Because we remember how good it was. Mm-hmm. Right. At some point you just have to realize there's great stuff now. There's great stuff in the future.
Yeah.
Let's embrace that instead of, you know, worrying about that shit that happened in the past.
Bro, what's funny about it is the reason I say that you're so attached to nostalgia, not necessarily the quality of the material, is I'm one of those dudes, like, I'm old school. I like it this way. And I remember when they put out, like, new Scooby-Doo movies and stuff, and my little girl was watching them. I was like, man, when I was a kid, Scooby-Doo was my favorite show. Those were the good shows. So I went and saw some old episodes. Dude, they're trash.
Yeah, oh, garbage.
They're so garbage. Bad.
But we were so stupid children.
Exactly. You can't replicate how you felt as a kid. So grow up, motherfuckers. It's a cartoon. If you don't like it, don't watch it. There's more important things in the world to worry about. I haven't watched it yet. Donnie obviously keeps mentioning it to me because I was a big He-Man.
Here's a fucking hot take.
Yeah.
Go look back at those old He-Man fucking episodes.
I bet they're garbage.
Right?
And I haven't in so long. And it's
everybody knows Thundercats was better. So go fuck yourself.
Thunder.
The animation, Thunder everything cats. About it. But,
fucking check Mumra. It out. Come on.
I'm Mumra. My God. Mumra was such a creepy old fuck.
Hello.
Tid is definitely the Mumra of this show.
The Mumra of the crew.
I wish you would be Mum.
Dan is the Wily Kit and Wily Cat.
You're more like Donnie's the Snarf.
He wanted to be Panther because he was the one black dude on Thunder.
I was just about to say, I don't get to be Panther.
Wow. No,
you're Wily Kit and Wily
Cat. Wow.
All right.
Yeah, that little you.
When you go in and read for the part and you realize I'm not Italian.
Someone has sent me a message saying that you can make Instagram Live go horizontal in order to see everything. I don't know how to do that shit.
Yeah, please let us know how.
Yeah,
because clearly we don't know what we're doing.
We don't know what we're doing. This is all brand new to us. We've been doing this episode, this show for a long time. This episode's the first time we broadcast live on IG. We just thought we'd try it on a lark. Here we go. Obviously, there are technical issues. We'll hopefully get it all figured out. The video archive of this show that'll be posted to godfathersofpodcasting.com will be nice and clean, and you'll be able to see everyone's smiling faces.
Oh, yeah, we ain't been doing IG since before IG was called IG.
Precisely. Make that a t-shirt, bro. Let's sell that.
Now, all
I mean, we actually we might have, because, you know, when I was younger, you just walked down to a certain corner, right, in North Las Vegas, and you got an Instagram all the time. Cost you $10.
An instant gram?
Yeah. Well done. Cost you $10.
Kid, you need to write lyrics, bro. You got the lines, man. You got the bars. Oh, you just gotta put them on beat.
I've been getting instant grams since back in the day.
Yeah.
And I liked it. And I did not share. We are supposed to be joined by our guest momentarily. If he's out there watching on IG Live, please jump on in the room. You did give him the new link, right, Dan?
I did.
All right, perfect.
Yeah.
So other things in local news anyway, I want to just throw this out there because it's important to me, as it probably is to some of our listeners. I am just thoroughly impressed. I had a lengthy and positive conversation this past weekend with my bro, Danny O, all about vaccines and COVID. And then he informs me yesterday he is now double vaccinated. I just want to say congratulations. Welcome to the club, my brother.
Well, look, man, let me put this out there, because I actually do think this is really important for us to do while we have the moment on this podcast. Is I want to say to everybody out there, I understand vaccine hesitancy if your concern is what it will do to your health, if you think that somehow there's going to be a negative cause. When this whole thing first started, including on this show as well as off the show, we all discussed our opinions of this vaccine. My position was there's more about it that I need to know. I didn't take a specific side other than to say I wanted to learn more. As I learned more, I saw COVID cases go down. I saw vaccinations go up. I looked into the efficacy. I looked at different university studies. All of these things helped me to decide that I wanted the Pfizer vaccine. This is something that even we've disputed amongst ourselves. And I also wanted to ensure that I got it the second time, as opposed to mixing and matching. Everybody out there has different views, even when they're in agreement that they should get the vaccine. So the first thing I want to say to people is try to stop the war between your opinions of which vaccine to get or not to get it at all, because that's not helping society. What will help society is if you do your own due diligence, look this shit up, and stop just taking words from people or memes or Facebook posts to make an assumption about something you don't know. Look into it. That's what I did. Figure it out for yourself and then make a decision. I'm finding there's far too many people making decisions without accurate information. So this is why it took me longer than the two of you to get double vaxxed. I also was very specific in the vax that I wanted, and I'm comfortable with my decision. Be comfortable with yours, but get off the arguments, y'all. This is a worldwide pandemic. You know what I'm saying? We're trying to get back to life, to normal life, and it's not going to take all the fussing and fighting. That's not going to help it. Mm-hmm. So I needed to say that.
I had this conversation with you on the weekend, and I'm at the point now where the people that are still holding off and saying, I'm just going to wait. What are you waiting for?
Well, what are you doing while you're waiting is my
correct.
Point.
Correct.
What are you doing while you're waiting?
If you're waiting just like for someone to tell you, okay, now it's fine.
Right.
You've already been told that. So what else are you waiting for? Are you waiting for someone you know to drop dead so you can go see? Are you waiting for everyone else you know to have it and be alive? Like, what are you waiting for?
Right.
Is my question, you know? And the thing that really chafes my nuts is the guys.
Bad underwear.
The guys and ladies who are refusing to get vaxxed. They're the first ones out to the bars.
Yes.
That are only
back soul to life. Soul.
Don't get us booted off IG.
Oh, yeah, true. That might happen, legit.
Yeah, don't get us booted
off.
I've
had my own IG lives taken down for playing my own music.
I didn't sell it. You did, dumbasses.
It doesn't matter to the bot. It just hears shit and goes, fuck you. But yeah, I don't understand the concept of I'm just going to wait. Okay, so while you're waiting, go do some research. Go learn.
That's what I don't understand. The not doing anything while you're waiting part, right? Like, I just don't understand anybody who doesn't wish to seek knowledge about something they don't know that could impact them. This is not like, you know what I'm saying? This is not like a cult following is deciding to, you know, be worried about. No, this is the whole world. Like, the whole world has to deal with this pandemic. This is not an isolated incident. This is not one country. This is not one city. The whole world is dealing with this. And if you're not doing your due diligence to figure out what the best move is, I don't understand what you're waiting for either. And I also pose this question to people who have done no research. Again, not the people who are hesitant necessarily or concerned, the people who are not even trying, is if it's not the vaccine at this particular point, then what is the way out of the pandemic? Because that's an answer I've not received. What is it?
If you ask some people, it's just opening your businesses and just, you know, not giving a shit and just going against the government.
Yeah.
And
it's just
you know
doing
what I mean?
Nothing really. Let's just go back to how it was.
That is never ever going to work, because the majority versus minority numbers obviously will kick in. You know what I mean? My only issue that I would like to know about with the people that are hesitant to taking the vaccine is, and we talked about this in the very beginning of all of this, when of this happened and the vaccines were going to roll out, and everybody seems to think that it, you know, I'm not going to get it because of shedding, or I'm not going to get it because of whatever the fucking thing of the day is, you know what I mean, for your reason for not getting it. Okay, you have a reason. How do you think you're going to be able to maintain the same kind of life and lifestyle that you did prior when the rest of the world has advanced? The rest of the world has moved on. The rest of the world is getting, quote, quote, back to life. The rest of the world, you know what I mean, is telling you that this is where we are. And if you can't do this, and if you can't get on board with it, then I think you need to just step aside for a second.
Right.
Take yourself out of the equation. Put the people around you into the equation and leave yourself out of it. Would you do this to the people that you care about? Would you do this to them? You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I think, bro, that's one of my biggest questions is, do you not care? You know what I'm saying? Right. About the rest. Right. I mean, one of the things that bothers me the most about people who seem to be so staunch about something they don't seem to have researched and understood is, is this isn't about you. It's about all of us, man. It's about other people too. Yeah. So when I hear excuses like, oh, well, if you're healthy, fine. If you're not, stay home. And it's like, motherfucker, we're trying to get everybody healthy here.
I stick mad drugs into my body on a reg. Right. On a reg, you know what I mean? But it's not about me. When I want to see my brothers, when I want to see my sisters, when I want to see my family and even my, you know, real family, I need to know that I'm keeping them safe.
Right.
I don't ever want to show up even before all of this. I don't want to show up at a family function with a fucking flu or a cold that I'm going to give to somebody else in the first place. And I'm certainly not going to show up with Ebola to give to somebody somebody else's place. I'm not going to show up with, you know, the plague or typhoid. And I'm not going to show up with fucking COVID. You know why? Because I was smart enough to say, you know what? I'm going to take it upon myself to make sure that I take care of others. And if y'all don't want to do that, then that's on you. That's cool. But just know that that's on you. And I got no time for any more of that.
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem too, man. Taking it one step further, it's not just the people you know, your family, those you want to hang out with. It's literally the world. I mean, there's things that we all do that involve strangers, going to games, parties, whatever, you know.
Picking up.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like life. And if you're trying to, like, I'm okay saying I'll do something for the betterment of society. In other words, I can bump into strangers, not have to worry about a mask and all that stuff, especially if they're more susceptible to disease than I am. I would rather say I did my part to ensure that that person that I don't even know
won't. Has anybody at the Olympics tested yet?
Don't know.
For COVID? I wonder if anybody at the Olympics has tested for COVID.
It has happened. I don't remember the names of the athletes because, like I said earlier, I haven't really been watching any of the Olympics, but I know that that story is out there and it is happening.
So these are the most elite athletes in the world.
Yeah.
Young.
Yeah.
Right. Everything that they say you shouldn't have to worry about. And it's hitting them. Schlubs like us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the people that we interact with in our lives are completely different from these guys. And it's if it can hit you at the highest peak of athleticism levels, come on, it can hit you anywhere.
Yeah. You
know? It's a 100%. Shame. And think about this. These motherfuckers went over there with the thoughts of like, holy shit, this was supposed to happen last year. I had to train for an extra year. I'm finally over here in Tokyo. I'm going to get my dick sucked so much. Right. And all of a sudden, nope, you got COVID. You got to get the fuck up out of here right now. You know?
Yeah, that's some true shit. I'm actually surprised that hasn't lessened the spike in Blazelas out there. It's a good
right. Point. And how many and how many condoms did you grab on the way out and just be like, fuck you then. You can't use these. I'm taking them home.
Apparently, COVID was the reason for the anti-sex beds being installed.
Oh,
they're trying to dissuade against COVID hookups.
But yo, we already know. Wait a second. These are cardboard beds.
Yeah.
So that's close to like a wall. You can just stand that bed up and put a glory hole in that motherfucker.
How comfortable are them motherfuckers though? Because are people actually allowed to sleep?
Yeah.
Because I mean, some of these athletes are big people, bro. Like, how much weight can it support?
Well, apparently, it can support enough so that you can sleep, but it ain't made to hook up. What do you want me to tell you?
I don't know if you're getting. I don't know if you're getting Simone Biles, like, you know, triple backflip onto the double split. You know what I'm saying?
It's
like,
gotta have motion detection though, because that's
it's cardboard. It's not high tech.
Well, it is Japan. Is Japan.
If either one of you were to lie in those beds, you don't need to be running a ting. Those things are breaking. You're not getting no sleep in Tokyo.
Well, maybe they have extra cardboard for the bigas.
Dude, I would smash that thing rubbing one out.
Because when Ted rubs one out, it's a violent experience.
Yeah, man. Neighbors call the fucking SPCA.
He calls himself names. He gets sandpaper.
Extra cardboard it's for ugly. The bigas.
Oh, right? And how many guys on that last day are going to take those beds, break them down, and lay them out on the floor and have like breakdancing competitions?
Mm-hmm.
All right, boys, it is time right now to introduce this week's featured guest, and it's time for the big hello. This man right here, he is a star comedian. You've seen him absolutely everywhere, from the top comedy festivals to Much Music's video on trial to a television commercial alongside your bro Danny O, and even sleeping in a Las Vegas strip club. All of these statements are true. He's a busy man making towns. On August 12th, he'll be in Nolens. 18th to the 22nd in Little Rock. August 26th to the 29th, he'll be in Tacoma, Washington. September 7th, he comes home to Toronto for one day. Then he's down to Philly on the 8th. New York City on the 16th. Chi-Town, September 17th to 19th. Nashville on the 25th, 26th. And then September 29th to the 2nd of October, he'll be in Oklahoma City. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear it. For the king of IG Live, he ain't for kids. Yeah. This is Trix.
This guy, man, I'm almost scared of how you got. I mean, I know I put that information out there, but that was a little
stalkerish.
That's a little scary.
It's a little stalkerish, right?
I'm going to tell you, Trix. Normally, when I do these intros, I got a lot more beef.
Yeah, I was going to say you went light tonight.
You're hard to dig up info on, man.
I'm glad you didn't dig up. Yes, I'm actually. You know, that means the team did their job, because I was listening to the intro. I'm like, man, if he says it,
Team Trix scrubbing the internet.
Shout out to Chris. I thought for a second, Chris, I thought you were Chris Jericho. I was like, man, this is a. I felt high profile for a second. I was like, I'm here with Chris Jericho. And then I was, that's not Chris Jericho.
I mean, when you close your eyes, I'll be whatever you want.
That's Chris. He's better than Chris. I like him better than Chris.
What's good, my bro? Finally got you, man.
Sorry, man. I was doing IG Live, man. So I apologize for being late. But yeah, man, I'm happy to do this, man. Daniel, it's been a while, bro.
It's been a minute, bro. And I see you climbing. I see, like Donnie said earlier, bro, you've become the king of IG Live. You've manipulated TikTok to your advantage, too. I just want to firstly congratulate you, bro. I love to see people from my home, you know, take off and do what it is they know they're supposed to be doing.
I appreciate you, bro.
The rest of the world.
Appreciate you.
But I'm going to ask you this, man, because I put out a record a couple years ago, and one of my first lines was, I'm not that social media savvy. And in this day and age, you have to be social media savvy. You've clearly shown how to master the social media world as it relates to, like, disseminating your comedy to everybody, from your split screen takes on shit to your chalet proverbs and stuff. How did you become such a master of that? And tell me just how important it is to keep your career going using those mediums.
You know what, man? It sucks that social media has become such a big form of. I don't even want to use a word. I'll just say that it's kind of the vocal point of what we do now as entertainers. Really? It's sad because social media has replaced. Let's take for example, social media has it's replaced flyers. Mm. You know, I come from an era where to get your name out there, you literally have to stand in the cold and hand out flyers to get people to come to either your party or whatever event you were doing. That was old school. You had, it was word of mouth. You had to call people. You had to sit home. You had to sit home like for an hour and call people. There was no email list. You literally had to take whatever numbers you had on paper, because we the cell phones was barely there too. And you literally had to call all your friends, or you had to stand outside, hand on a flyer that you probably printed at a Kinko's, and hand them out. And that's how you got people to come out. And that's right. that was where people appreciated quality over quantity, because now we live in an age where club owners don't care who's in their building. They just want bottle service and they just want people to come in there, right? So things have changed. And social media is part of the reason for that, because now you're talking to thousands of people at once. One, depending how many followers you have, one post is equivalent to 5,000 flyers for some people.
Right.
There is an interesting point of diminishing return when it comes to that social media advertising, right? And so I'll use the example. Here's a comparison for you. Chris Tidwell, 25 years as a professional wrestler. And you know, Tid, that when you first broke in, if you were going to go wrestle at a venue somewhere, if that house was packed, that's because the promoter got out, or he got his street team, and they went out and flyered and put out posters. But part of that flyering process is also making one-to-one connections with people on the street. And it's that time that you take to go, hey, we got a show this Saturday. It's going to be at the convention center. Make sure you come. Oh, yeah. Chris Jericho's going to be there. I mean, Tidwell. Just come on down. It's going to be a lot of fun. And now you see wrestling promoters put out a show, and it's like 50 people show up, and the talent will say, did you promote this thing? Yeah, I posted it on Facebook. What else you want me to do? You know, like,
well, here's the difference, right? And this is the point I'm going to get to with social media, and this is what separates social media guys from certain people.
Yeah,
one of the first guys to take social media and make it a thing was Dane Cook. Right, okay. Dane Cook took MySpace in its earliest form, and he became a star off of MySpace. Why? Because he would go home and he would respond to every message he got. He would interact with his fans, and that's the thing about social media that people need to understand. Yeah, you could have a million followers, but if you can't put butts in seats from that million followers, then that million followers doesn't mean anything. It's the people that interact with their fans. It's the people that put out content consistently, and you see them in the comments talking to fans, the occasional DM, whatever. That's how you build your fans. It's not as simple as just putting out a post and then everyone's just going to come. The promoters that get the people are the promoters that kind of make fans feel like they were invited, even though it was virtually. They kind of make the fans feel like they were invited personally. So there's those promoters that, even though they got a big following or a big mailing list, they still take the time to hit certain people up individually and be like, hey, look, this is a personal invite. I want you to come out. You know what I mean? It's still interaction that people lack with social media. That's what separates.
Tid, I know you want to jump in. I know you want to jump in.
That's it.
Exactly.
The hustle. Before we go in and applaud Dane Cook for doing it first, I think Louis C.K. did it and Dane stole it. I'm just saying.
Oh, wow. what's funny though? I like how they squash that though. They kind of squash that beef though. Like, I like,
you know, it's funny. It's when, I like what they did. When he first started the story, and you said Dane Cook, like, you know, took my space, I thought he was going to say Dane Cook took my joke.
Nah, you know what's funny though? Dane Cook is not, he's not really notorious for joke thieving. That's not what he's really known for. But, you know, him and that Louis C.K. thing, I kind of like how they, as men, did it on a big scale on Louis' show, how they kind of sat and kind of squashed it. So, I mean, whatever is whatever. But that's what Dane Cook did, though. He did the little things. Everybody thought he blew up overnight, but that's not how it happened. Right. He went home every night with MySpace when it was a thing, and he literally would respond to, like, all the fans, talk to all the fans. So he created a fan base. It wasn't as simple as he just blew up overnight. Like TikTok, you could do that. You put out one video on TikTok that gets a million hits, and you could be a star. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But the people who stay relevant and put butts in seats are the ones who create the fan base within their popularity. You understand what I'm saying?
Who's doing it right now?
There's a few cats. Trevor Wallace is doing it. Ryan Davis is doing it. You know, Major Hype is doing it. You know, guys like Wayardi and a whole bunch in this.
Oh, yeah, that's
the guy. There's a lot of female, models who are doing it too. It's just people who are. It's the people who are interactive. They don't just sit in the fact, okay, I got a million followers, I'm right. good. I got the blue check mark, I'm good. No, they're the ones that they still put in the work.
Listen, right. people like the Kardashians and Cardi B, they interact with their fans on the regular, and there's a reason why they have.
And look how big they are.
Millions of followers.
Yeah. And they don't have to do that, right? They don't have to do that. They're going to get, you know, superstars, like, you know, the superstars like the Kanyes and the Rihannas and the Beyoncés, they're going to get that interaction. Justin Bieber, they're going to get those interactions by default because they're mega stars. But in essence, they still interact with their fans, whether it's concerts or, you know, podcasts or whatever, they still interact with their fans.
So, but Trace, doesn't that kind of speak to the fact that social media has helped for certain artists to boom, as opposed to some of the dismay you were sort of feeling over it coming into play and taking over from the Flyer era? Because you've obviously made one of the few transitions from our city to, I know you're in Vegas now, where right. Tit is from. And that obviously was a process. You took several steps. You put in effort. You put in work. So how much of that hustle that Tit just mentioned was required on social media? As you say, I just saw your IG live. You interact with the people who show up and talk to you and saying, right. thanks for the shout out. So talk about how that was part of your hustle, because me included, I think there's a lot of artists, not just from your hometown, but worldwide, are looking to do that and don't know how. They haven't been able to use it to their advantage yet. And I think you made a really strong point about the interaction aspect.
So for me, I don't want to say blew up, because I'm a very calculative guy in the sense that I don't like to be complacent. So I don't think I blew up on but how I got on the radar of sure. social media was I put out a video. And it's always the video that you don't even expect. It's always the video that you don't even care about. I was legit going somewhere, and it was snowing in October in Edmonton, and I was mad it was snowing.
I remember.
And I literally just got on the camera and just ranted. And if you watch the video now, you can see, like, there's no edits. It's just literally me in that character, which is just me imitating my father,
sure.
Just ranting about the snow. And I threw a couple of references in there, like at the time Game of Thrones was hot, and at the time Donald Trump was running the first election race.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So I threw a couple of references in there. Anyway, I went to the store, came back, and my phone was like going off. Everybody's like, "Yo, you're a world star. Yo, and I didn't understand how." And celebrities were retweeting it and stuff. Now here's where the work comes in.
Right.
As the followers started to climb, and I was starting to get all this heat. It's all about consistency. The minute you start to see like a rise in your social media, you can't just sit there and be like, okay, well, I'm about to get 1,000 or a million followers. I'm good. No,
right.
now you have to feed the lions. Like, you got to feed the people now. And you have to, now they've given you your lane. This is what they want to see. They want to see you do that character, and they want to hear you talk about things. They want to hear your take in that character on things. So now you have to be consistent. And what a lot of people lack on social media is consistency.
Right.
They put out one video a week, and they think they're good. Where unfortunately, you know, some of this TikTok-ish, you got TikTok people that put out 4 or 5 videos a day consistently.
Yeah.
That's how they get the followers. You know what I mean? So
what's that? Yeah. What's that kid's name?
From
I think he's from Italy. The black Cabby? Kid that, he's got more followers than anybody. Yeah. Followers than anybody on TikTok.
Yeah.
Somebody did an extrapolation based on the number of views he has on social media and what that translates into in dollars based on TikTok's revenue model.
Yeah.
This guy's making like $700,000 a month.
Yeah, I know cats. I have friends who are making they're not making that money, but they're making, I know a girl who made in her earlier, she's probably making more now. She was making 40 grand a month, literally just talking about her life. She just literally got on. She just got on YouTube, and she
this
was literally
doesn't
just,
even talk.
Yeah.
Oh, the guy that goes like this. I know. There's a guy who makes angry faces. His whole thing is angry expressions. That's
angry
it.
Reactions. That's
angry thing. Reactions, and he makes roughly around almost that much as well.
He kills it. Man. I know.
But that's the thing. It's, and that's where consistency comes, because they found what the people basically gave them this is what we want. This is what we love about you. This is all we want to see. So you have to keep feeding people that and finding ways to use that to kind of stay relevant. So that's all they do is just they kept feeding the people.
Yeah.
Feeding
it's the interesting people. When you say that. And Dan brought up TikTok. And I had this conversation with Tid a few weeks ago. TikTok. And
see, that's interesting. Hold on, I'm sorry. I gotta ask you.
Let me just say this one point. Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. What I've noticed on TikTok is the people that grind and create content like you're describing, Tricks, they're the ones that blow the fuck up. Celebrities on TikTok have a tiny, tiny audience because they just post shit every now and then.
Well, and you know, like Jason Derulo,
they're just reposting stuff that's already somewhere else.
Yeah,
I think if you look at the type of, like, for example. And it's not me knocking anybody. Like, you look at Jason Derulo, who's kind of got a deal with TikTok. So he puts out random TikToks constantly because he's got a deal with TikTok. He's making money. But the Justin Biebers of the world and the Drakes of the world, the mega stars that are huge, I've seen Justin Bieber come on for like 2 minutes and literally sit there. And girls are, I'm talking comments and hearts, and people are losing their mind. And he's not even saying anything.
Right.
You know? Right. And, I mean, good for him. I mean, he's at that level where he could do that. Yeah. But guys like us, like myself, if I go one day, literally on Instagram especially, there was a time where if I went one day without posting a video, I would lose followers.
Really?
No. Yeah. I'm not saying, but I mean, you mentioned Justin Bieber and then you mentioned the four of us. Let's take a look at, like, I mean, come on. The four of us combined into like some crazy good looking transformer aren't pulling the fucking kind of shit that Bieber is on fucking.
No,
mine.
But you know what? No, Bieber's
he's on that level where they just want to see his face. They don't even care if he's talking.
Right.
You know, they just want to see him on. You know,
with me, they look at it and they're like, yo, that's a contraceptive.
It's gotten to a point, you know, you're hilarious. I've gotten to a point where if now when I come on talking like this, if I don't got the African accent, people are like, nah, bro.
Yeah.
Nah,
bro.
We want to hear the actor. Where's the African dude? I've had people hit me up and like, yo, is Chale coming to the show too?
Right.
Like, nigga, he's the same person.
I got to ask you that about that, because you just mentioned your father and how you're basically imitating him, and just how much of your routine is influenced by your dad. How much of an influence did he have on what you do?
So here's what bothers me about some of you promoters, okay? I know when you see on Instagram, you see me as that character making fun of hairstyles and stuff. Don't be dumb and think that I'm going to come to your comedy club and do an hour of that guy.
Right.
You understand? Like, just understand, do your research. Understand that I do this. Mm-hmm. And yes, that character will come out at some point during the act. Right. Because obviously I'm going to talk about my father. I'm going to talk about my mother. I'm going to talk about my heritage and my culture. And he'll come out at some point. But I ain't giving you 45 minutes of me dissing hairstyles.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I also understand why you would assume that, because we live in an age now where bookers are grabbing these TikTok stars and they're grabbing these Instagram stars, putting them on stage. And basically these guys who they don't do stand up for a living. Some of these guys are not comics. They're just comments on IG, and then you go see them, and they're pretty much, and they're doing their act. They're just doing what you see on Instagram for an hour, right? And then everybody thinks that's stand-up comedy, and that's not what it is. There are some stand-up comics who became social media famous.
Right.
So, and you just have to know the difference, that's all.
Right.
So here's a question I have for you. When you talk about social media, and you have the ability to do it pretty much anywhere, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And in comedy, everybody thinks to yourself, you either got to work in New York, you got to work in L.A. Why Vegas?
Well, that's a good question.
I have my thoughts on as to why Vegas, because I'm from there and I get it and stuff like that. But
you might be able to back me on what I'm about to say, because you're from here. So. Me personally, as a kid, I fell in love with the whole essence of Rat Pack and just Vegas as a whole, right? Mm-hmm. Now, did I think I was going to move here and do comedy? No. The reason why I chose Vegas was during the journey, the plan was to go to New York. That was the original plan, because I always feel like New York is where you go to be a great stand-up. LA is where you go to be seen.
Right.
There's a difference. So why I chose Vegas is, I used to come to Vegas constantly on tour, and I would always play Vegas. And I fell in love with the scene here. And the comedy scene here is very conducive to what I do. like the whole aura of Vegas. It's a show town. You're always going to get on stage here. There's a stage almost everywhere here. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even have to be a comedy club. I have performed at a brewery. I have performed in the back of a bakery. I have performed in people's rooms, in a rich person's suites. You know what I mean? There's always a stage here. This is a show town, and it's a great hub. You can get to anywhere in the world from Vegas, anywhere in America, especially. You can get there. You know, so it's a great hub. It's a great scene. You're always going to get reps here on stage, and you're surrounded by entertainers on a consistent basis. You could actually, the money you can make here, you can back me up, Chris. If you are in the entertainment building, in the entertainment world here, the money you can make here is endless if you put in the work.
That's what I'm saying. You say put in the work. So are you bouncing? Because like from like how many shows in a night are you? Do you know what I mean? Like, because we know sometimes you got to get that on where you're like, I'm up on Henderson at like eight, you know, 10 o'clock.
You know.
I'm like over, you know, in the Valley at fucking 2 o'clock in the morning. Like
there's times where
you bounce back and forth, right?
There's times where I'll do a club at 6 p.m. Then I got to do another set at another club. I got to get to the other club by 8. So I do my set, finish there. Then I got to get to the other club at 8. Now, sometimes these clubs are close together. Sometimes they're not. Then after that, you got to kill time because then you got to show at 12:30 at night. So I've done probably like 4 sets in one night, sometimes 5 sets in one night. And that's the grind. Sometimes in between you're doing bar shows. Yeah, like sometimes you're doing clubs, and then you got a couple of bar shows in between, and then you got to kill time to do go on stage at like 2 o'clock in the morning. That's the grind here.
All right, so in between, you got to eat.
Yeah, if you can.
Where are you going?
Me? If I have time, then I'll go somewhere proper. Like I'll go Herbs and Rye is my favorite. Right. One of my favorite spots. If I have no time, you know me, In-N-Out. I'll just grab In-N-Out.
It's right by the highway too.
Yeah, there's an In-N-Out by almost everywhere out here. Yeah. So
can you get good doubles in Las Vegas?
Listen, let me tell you something. Dude. The Caribbean food here is whack. Is whack. I love you, Vegas. No city can be perfect, but you are not Toronto when it comes to when you get proper jerk chicken or doubles or roti. I haven't seen roti in a year, and I cannot wait to get to. I cannot wait for that show in September because I'm going off. Like food
you
wise,
got one date, one Toronto date, man. You're doing 3 nights in buttfuck Arkansas. You got one date
between me and you. There's gonna be multiple Toronto dates because the show's. I'm going to end up doing 2 or 3 shows.
All right. That's what
just,
we like to hear.
Just based on the ticket sales and what we're seeing, it's going to be 3 shows. But there's a Caribbean restaurant by my house, and I'm not going to name it because I don't want to disrespect it. But just because you put gravy on chicken, don't make it jerk chicken.
No. White Yardy tells people that all the time.
They got some jerk sauce they bought at Walmart.
You want tacos, Vegas is good.
You want tacos? America's good. There's Mexicans here.
Saying, right?
Yeah, America in general. Okay, here's a question for you. Here's your chance to go viral on TMZ, okay? It's no secret. The story has been out for about 10 days. Bill Cosby is planning to tour.
Hey.
Now,
you know he's going to end up in Vegas.
I'm not going to ask you about the right or wrong of Bill Cosby going out on tour. Here's what I'll ask you.
Lord.
If Cosby's publicist calls your people and says, Trix, we want you to open for Bill Cosby.
That's a question, right?
Are you fucking running?
Well, first and foremost, no, because... my style does not coincide, but they're not calling me. Okay. I'm never getting that call, but I know what you're trying to say. No, I would not. I have a rule in life, man. I ain't selling my soul to be famous, bro. I don't need it that badly. The opportunity would be great, but I ain't trying to get canceled before I start, dog. Like, I don't need the fame that bad. And Cosby's a hero. I'm not talking about the guy, the person. I'm talking about him as a comic. From a comedic standpoint, he's a hero, and he's definitely an influence. So it would hurt me to have to turn that down because I've always wanted to meet the man. But for my career and integrity's sake, I wouldn't do it.
D- does it hurt you to still call him a hero in light of everything?
No, because I'm talking about the man, what he did in comedy. I'm not talking about what he did when the shows were over.
Isn't it hard to separate? Like, OJ was a hell of a running back, but he's OJ Simpson, the double murderer.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But I didn't look at him. I didn't look at him as a murderer. I looked at him as a running back.
That's the same with R. Kelly. It's the same with R. Kelly, right? It's the same with R. Kelly. Like, there's some songs that I still listen to that R. Kelly was a part of or is on. I can separate the artist from the man. I don't have to like the person and his exploits as a person, but the artistry is a completely different thing for me. It's like Michael Jackson, right? I'm a big Michael Jackson fan, huge Michael Jackson fan. And I personally don't believe any of the stuff that people say about him. However, if let's just play devil's advocate, if it turned out to be true that Michael did those things, I'm not going to stop bumping Beat It. I'm not going to stop bumping Thriller.
Yeah. See, I guess I have trouble separating. Like when he was alive, I knew Chris Benoit fairly well. I would talk to him. I would have dinner with him when he was in town. I cannot go back and watch a Chris Benoit match, and I cannot entertain people that say to me, he should be recognized in the Hall of Fame. I'm like, the man killed his wife and his seven-year-old son.
Is that proven, though? Is that 100% dude. Proven?
Oh, yeah.
We just come to the conclusion that he did it because he's not here, and we're just going to say, he did it.
Well, I don't know.
There was more evidence than at the OJ scene.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm asking.
It's not a matter of whether he did it or not, but the reasons why, because that same concussion movie, what's the disease that you get when your head gets hit around? Chris Benoit, they studied his brain and discovered that he had some damage. That's it. So, it's a little bit like he was. I want to talk about artistry, though, Trix, because, I mean, you're a hip-hop man too, bro. And I asked this question of Russell Peters a few weeks ago on this show. And I know for me how I rate MCs, and I think that different MCs have different, skill sets in their arsenal.
Yep.
And depending on the skill set you have, it'll determine my rating of you as an MC. One of those things is the ability to freestyle. And I think that same ability is what some of my favorite comics have. I know Russell is classic for just flying off with the guests in his audience and stuff. In your mind, how much does freestyle, I'm going to use that term for the hip hop term, how much does that play into your set, and how important is it to you, or isn't it, in the arsenal of a comic?
First of all, I think any comic knows that you have to be able to call audibles in your set.
Okay.
Right? You have to.
Yeah.
Because, and this is why Russell, became the sensation he became. And this is, let's put the bias of him being from Toronto.
Yeah.
And we're showing love to our Toronto brethren.
Yeah.
Right. I personally don't, me and Russell are not friends, but you have to give a man his props. I don't have to like you to respect you. Mm-hmm. And I know studying Russell, what made Russell special was his ability to make his set seem new every time you saw him. Right. So even if he was doing the same jokes, they always came across new because he had the ability to jump into the audience, mess with somebody in a very clever way, and then jump into his material. So every time you go and see him, it almost looks like he's doing new stuff. But in actuality, he wasn't doing new stuff. And that's a skill set to be able to do that. Right. Mm-hmm. So freestyling in comedy is very important because if you walk into a room and because it was actually Russell, and me and Russell were friends. It was actually Russell that told me that I should never have a set list. And at the time, I didn't understand why he said that. But now in hindsight, I see why. Because if you walk into a room with your mindset that this is the set you're going to do no matter what. Right. And then you walk into the room, and it's all old. Let's say it's all old people.
Right.
Right. And your whole set's about dating apps and Facebook and Tinder and all this young boy ish. Mm-hmm. Right. And now your mind, you made it up that this is the set I'm doing. I don't care. Now you're in the room with all 90-year-olds. Then what?
Right. Yeah.
Right. You got to live and die by that set. But if you have the ability to walk it, because Russell's also a DJ. This is another trick that a lot of people don't understand. Russell was also a DJ. I was a DJ. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, there was no Serato. You had to learn how to read a room playing records. Like with music, you had to learn how to keep a dance floor going with music.
Right.
So you were immediately taught how to read a room. Mm-hmm. So Russell has the ability to walk into a room, look around, and be like, okay, I can't do this, because I see some young people over here, but there's some older folk over here, and there's some people over here. He's already in DJ mode when he walks into a room. So that's why he could get up on stage and freestyle DJ style, because he knows how to call audibles. And most good Chappelle, yeah, Kevin Hart,
for sure,
Chris Rock, they all know how to do that. Carlin Pryor did it. Mm. Eddie Murphy. These are people that knew how to walk into a room and decipher, okay, this is what I'm going to do,
right,
and play to the room. If you can't do that, look at the robotic comics. I'm not going to name names.
Yeah, no,
look
at the guys. I get you.
Look at the guys who stay stay in the pocket and they don't scramble. They just stay there. And then they live and die with their set. You know who they are. I don't know how to name it.
Yeah, I think those are called women.
Oh, dude. Jesus. We're trying not to get canceled before we get started.
Listen, you know what, Tid, though? I'm a shout out Tid for saying that partially. You know why? Because let me tell you something. There's a few women that walk into a room that will kill a room. A few.
Right, but there's a majority, and I don't say this because there are women out there that I do find very lovely and funny and everything like that. But for the majority of it, they don't have it, it's not the same kind of mindset going into that comedy structure. So they just stick to the set and do their thing and go.
Allison Dore, I have one for you, Tid. Allison Dore's
calling.
I will say this, man.
There are some women in comedy that I definitely respect. You know, yes. I respect Whoopi Goldberg. Yes. You know, I respect Phyllis Diller, Joan Rivers, because Joan Rivers was raw with it. You know what I mean? I even respect Ellen DeGeneres. I don't care what people are saying about her and her antics on her television show. Her as a comic, she was dope.
Here's a quick question, though. When I think about this, do you think that, because this is a new thing now, do you think that too many comics are using too many outside writers for their stuff nowadays? You know what I mean? Because this is a big thing, and like, there's a lot of people that are contributing to comics, and that's not a new thing by any stretch. You know what I mean?
I feel like you have to have a pen.
Yeah.
I get it. Like when you get to a certain level of status, when you become rich. You know, you know, and a lot of our favorite comics have writers, unfortunately.
Right.
Mm. But I feel like for you to be dope, for me to respect you, you have to have a pen. That's why I respect Chappelle. That's why I respect Rock. Like, and Rock had writers too. Like Chris Rock, you know, wrote with Wanda Sykes and whatnot. But Chris Rock has a pen too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He could actually craft his own. And I'm not mad at you if you're all writers. Like, if your whole career was you had a look. And somebody found you, but you just happen to have charisma. So we just throw some writers with you, and now you're a comic. I don't really know if I can really mess with that.
Yeah,
I think you have to have a pen. It's the same thing.
Sensibility too.
It's the same thing with hip hop, right? Yes, I think right. Busta. I think I heard Busta say that I can't call somebody the greatest ever if they can't write their own rhymes. Right?
I'm with him.
Don't be the Spice Girls.
But I also, I agree and I disagree with him because if we're gonna say that. Do we consider Michael Jackson one of the greatest of all time? Some do. Do we consider Whitney Houston one of the greatest of all time? Some do. And they never penned their own music.
Yeah, I feel you, though. I do think that hip-hop culture developed its own set of rules and unwritten rules when it comes to the pen. You know what I'm saying? Like you're talking.
I think as a rapper, I can't call you greatest of all time if you don't write your own rhymes.
But that's what I'm saying.
With that. As a rapper.
I'm gonna agree.
Sure. As a rapper.
That's my agreement with you. And I feel like comedy falls in line to some degree with that.
Well, here's the thing. Richard Pryor, you're hilarious. Richard Pryor, I think Richard Pryor is the GOAT. Right?
Same.
Richard Pryor is one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time. Same. But he didn't write all his own things either.
Okay.
Paul Mooney wrote some stuff for Richard Pryor as well. So, you know, but it's your ability to take somebody else's words.
Sure.
Right,
that's
and I'm sure
Richard, too, for sure.
It is a skill, and I think Richard also. It's not like Richard was just sitting at home and then he gets a big, you know, book of stuff to say on stage. I'm pretty sure he has his input because he's chronicling his life. You know, maybe there was somebody, maybe there's somebody to help him. Because in comedy, we do help each other with tags. Like I've had comics pull me off to the side and be like, "Hey, that joke you do about blah blah blah, yo, here's the way you could punch it up better." Like we help each other in that regard, right?
So. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and I'm sure it happens as an artist. I'm sure someone's like, "Yo, that line you say about blah blah," you know. So
we do it all the time. Yeah, especially in the studio. Let's, you know, the in the performance, flipping a line a bit. I get you. But it starts with your own pen. I agree.
Yeah, like nothing. There's no greater feeling than you having a joke that people are reciting that you know you penned yourself.
Yes, sir.
Like you crafted that. You wrote that in your house. You went in little clubs, worked it out.
You know it's yours. Yeah.
Like you know it's yours. That's no better feeling than that.
No doubt.
I wanted to throw this out there because you talk about comedians that have the ability to adjust on the fly.
Yeah.
And I think musically, if we're going to make the parallel, that's a very difficult thing to do. Usually a performer, like a musician, a band, whatever it is, they have their set list and they're going to do their set list.
Right.
I love all genres of music, everything under the sun. I'm a huge fan of everything. The best live band I've ever seen, and I've seen them so many times I can't even count, is Pearl Jam, because Eddie Vedder always took the approach of, we don't have a set list.
Mm. Okay.
He feels the crowd.
I can respect that.
And based on the crowd, like he has said, like, you know, there are times when it's like, you know, I meant to go into Don't Call Me Daughter, but the crowd was so hype, I had to go to Jeremy.
So that's a better show, though. That's a better show.
Better show.
That's a better show because, like, if you're going by the energy of the audience, that's like a DJ's mentality, right? That's what makes certain DJs, like a Starting From Scratch, shout out to him. That's what makes him dope because he just has the ability to know what to play next. I've always said technical skills is great, but it's your selection process. 100%. And that's the same thing with comics, right? Good comics know how to walk into a room, be on a stage, hit them with one joke. And then sometimes even as you're talking, the crowd's energy kind of goes, okay, I was going to go into this, but I feel like I should talk about this. Mm-hmm. You know, they're kind of leading me here. And if you don't have the ability to do that, then your show ain't going to be on point. That Pearl Jam-ish, that makes their concerts dope because he's almost like he's mind reading the audience and he's giving the audience what they want.
You never 100%. Get the same thing
twice. You know what I mean? That's what makes it dope.
And that's not like a one person show. That's a whole band. And so to me, to call an audible on the fly, right? That's tough. That's a skill that they've.
And that makes me want to see them more times too. Like I could watch them multiple times. You know what I mean? Because if I could go to a Pearl Jam concert and be able to call it the next song they're going to do, that concert's not anticlimactic, right? But if I go there every time and I get that kind of experience every time I see Pearl Jam, that makes me want to go see them more.
Well, there's definitely concerts I've attended where you can rhyme off what the next song is going to be.
Yeah.
They're doing the same set every show, every night, every
year. I mean, mind you, there are some artists where I don't care. If I could go to certain artists and like if Wu-Tang did that, I wouldn't care. I just want to hear the songs, right? I wouldn't care. But I hear what you're saying with Pearl Jam. Like one of the best concerts I ever saw was Prince. Prince got an encore six times. Mm. And I've never seen that before. That's how much music he had.
Yeah.
When you could encore six times, I'm like, wow. So I hear what you're saying.
Did he only do two songs during his set?
No. No. What's dope about Prince?
Suck it.
Prince has those type of songs where you can listen. I don't care if he does the whole song in the concert.
Right.
So Prince, what he did, all the songs you thought he was gonna do. Ends off with obviously the Purple Rain is probably one of the last songs, if not the last song he does. And you're thinking the concert's over, but he has so much music that you forget. Yeah. So he leaves and the band's still there, and then he comes back on and then he starts playing some hits, and you're like, oh, I forgot.
He didn't do that one.
Yeah, and he did that six times to put that in perspective.
Yeah. But two songs was a good joke.
That's the thing. That was a good joke. I was actually about to say that. It's like maybe at my show I'll do
just Raspberry Beret and 1999. I'm out. Please, get out. And then leaves.
No. Please, come back. That's called making them want it.
Yeah. That is right. What about Purple Rain? And it comes up, does Cream, and then he leaves.
Trix, on this show, we have listeners from literally all over the world and viewers from all over the world. So for that reason, it's very rare that we ask any kind of real specific Toronto-centric question. But you're a Toronto man. And we want to ask you a Toronto-centric question. I don't even know if you're aware of this story. It's been in the news over the last couple of weeks. Okay. Are you aware that everything in and around the greater Toronto area, Southern Ontario in general, that has been named after Henry Dundas, is about to be renamed.
I heard about this. What did Harry Dundas do? Educate me.
Yeah, so for those out, or Henry Dundas was a Scottish lawmaker. He had authority over over Canada, whose amendment, his amendment to a 1792 bill before Parliament, slowed the end of the slave trade. He did everything in his power to prevent the end of slavery in Canada.
Oh, Dundas.
So, what they're talking about now is renaming the town of Dundas, which is just outside Hamilton, Ontario, but an hour from Toronto.
They can do that.
They're talking about Dundas Street East, Dundas Street West, Dundas Square in Toronto.
So what, no more Ossington Station?
Dundas Station.
No more Bathurst?
Yeah. Those stations would be renamed. They're also talking about they cannot force independent business owners to change their names, but they are imploring them to do so, because you got to think there's places like Dundas Barbershop, Dundas Bar, Dundas this, Dundas that. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering your thoughts on this.
Yeah, Dan, you shake your head. I'm surprised.
Dan has been very vocal on subjects like this in the past. I'm getting a sense of your reaction.
Yeah.
And listen, you're entitled to take whatever stance you like, and it's totally up to you.
Here is what I'll say.
Yeah,
I understand it. So I'm not mad at people who say they should change the names, because if you're going to change the name of the Washington Redskins, if you're going to change the name of Edmonton Eskimos, if you're going to follow suit in righting racist wrongs, then I understand it. I'm just annoyed at cancel culture as a whole. As a comedian, I'm just annoyed by it. So hear me when I say this. I am not mad at what they're doing. If you want to change the names, change them. I understand it. But from a comedic standpoint, I'm just done with the cancel culture. I'm done unhatching somebody's past, and now you're writing the wrongs now. And then we're just, it's just, you know what I mean? I'm just done with that as a whole. But I understand why they would do that.
The only piece, yeah, I get it too.
And I get why they would do it. And I'm with it. Listen,
but I'm curious,
if I come back to Toronto and there's no more Dundas, I really won't care either way. I really won't.
I'm curious, because you said from a comedic standpoint, what is it from the comedic standpoint that you dislike about cancel culture? Does it not lend itself to more comedy?
No, because you're giving voices to people to just bitch about everything. And at the end of the day, I'm one of my people who have seen me, because I mean, you've only ever seen me in Toronto, Danny. Like,
yeah,
I'm a very different comic than I was before I left Toronto. And one of the things I do on stage in the beginning is I tell the audience from the jump, if you're easily offended, you might want to leave, because I don't care. Right. I don't care. You're an adult, bro. Like, I don't care anymore. I'm sick and tired of people looking for reasons to be mad at shit. I'm done. Right. I'm going to treat you're in Las Vegas. Some of you are going to cheat on your wives tonight. Right. I don't care. You're going to make worse decisions. Yep. So for me, from a comedic standpoint, I believe in free speech. I believe you can say whatever you want. As long as you're ready to deal with the consequences of what you say, then cool. But I can't stand giving voices to people who like to bitch about dumb shit. Like this particular subject, I'm not talking about this particular subject.
No, I get you.
I understand why people be like, I'm not naming my fish after a guy who wanted to perpetuate slavery. Yeah, bun that. Right. But at the end of the day, but it also opens the door for people to bitch about the dumbest shit.
You know what I mean?
And that's what bothers me. What bothers me.
I want to cancel the guy who played Stomach in the Pizza Pops commercial, because I was greatly offended by his
hilarious.
By his whatever boy. Like, I was greatly offended.
I loved it. It's funny. I saw that commercial, Danny. You put it up. I don't even know where you found that, bro. I saw it. I must have watched it like 20 times. I was like, yo, I forgot about, look how skinny I was. You watched those videos.
Did you just say you don't know where Dan found that?
It's on his reel.
He could do this right behind him right now.
I don't know how you, I was like, I don't have that, bro. I was like, son. I forgot about that. That was one of my first ever. I think that's my only commercial, to be quite honest. Yeah, I remember
Dan's pack game is ninja level. Like, he has everything.
I spent the whole day breaking records. Remember, I spent the whole day breaking pre-frozen records, bro. Yeah, I broke some good ones too. Like they
I remember.
They had some good vinyl too. Like they had a James Brown.
I broke that.
I know we broke it.
Oh, he wasn't dead.
And he wasn't dead at the time. He was still alive. Like think about it. Some of those records were. I'm really sure they wish they didn't break those records.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. You know, I'll give you the answer right now. This goes back to somewhere close to around the time we shot that commercial, and I put together this little mini doc. My brother put it together, actually.
Okay.
It's actually Donnie, if you remember. You posted it to your, and it's still available. This is how I found it, on your old YouTube page.
Are you guys brothers?
No. My brother put together the video. Donnie is just some motherfucker who I do a show.
Don't you guys have the same last name?
No, bro. He's Portuguese. I'm half Spanish. We're at war every time there's a soccer tournament. We ain't those kind of brothers. Yeah, but we brothers.
What Trix is saying is I look more Jamaican than you do. I guess so.
I'm the lightest guy in this whole show.
Not gonna lie, Donnie. You could, if I didn't see De Silva there, you could have passed for a light skinned man from Benton, bro.
Yeah, Donnie's hung out with us enough to know. He says things like runners and things.
Not even like
I'm a Scarborough man's.
Yo, Danny, he doesn't even look like a Branson man. He looks like a Bramah Lee man, bro. Like you're a Bramah Lee man, bro.
So that video is still on that video, Don, that you posted all them years ago, and I just snatched it off and reposted it. So
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I know. That's how long ago it was, man.
We're gonna have to link to that commercial on this week's episode.
That was hilarious. I couldn't believe you found that. I was trust me, Danny. I was like, I was gonna call you. I was like, bro. Where'd you find that?
I had to dig in the crates and remember that Donnie had posted it. So that's crazy. Yeah, man.
Trix, last question I want to ask you, man, because you've been awesome with your time. When you talk about cancel culture and you talk about the effect on comedy and everything else, preparing for this interview, I went back and watched a ton of your shit, man. I watched a ton
I'm
of
sorry.
Your shit.
I'm very sorry.
I laughed a couple times. It was good. So I went back and watched. But there's a lot of stuff, man, that I feel like if you did the same bits today, you might get shit on. When you're talking about don't fuck with Asian people, when you're talking about like all these different kinds of bits, right? Where you're, I mean, it's very much in line with what comedy was for about 30 year window. Like we're gonna,
you know, what's cool?
It seems to be like it's becoming less acceptable to make racially specific jokes as part of your act.
I think it depends on I think it depends on who you are and the style of comedy, because my style is a Bill Burr-ish style,
right?
Where when I get on stage, my persona, people kind of want to hear my take on certain things. Like you have comics who we only want to hear dick jokes from that person.
Right.
You have comics where we only want to hear political jokes from that person. I'm in the realm of, yo, I wonder what Trix has to say about that.
Fair.
So I do agree. I hear what you're saying in terms of some of the jokes that I might have done back in the past. Because all my stuff that's online is not indicative of how I do comedy now.
Oh, I'm sure.
I've definitely changed. But the format's the same in the sense that I don't give a fuck. I'm going to speak my mind on some things, but I'm going to get you to relate to my views because you have those same views. I just want you to tap into them. Case in point, when I moved into America and I started touching Trump stuff, a lot of comics in the green room was like, yo, you can't be talking about Trump. And I'm like, watch me. And I would go out there, and by the time I'm done, I would have Trump supporters come up to me and be like, I mean, I'm not going to lie. What you said was funny. Like, because if you listen to what I'm saying, I'm not attacking you for who you voted for. I'm not attacking your country. I'm trying to get you to laugh at the fact that you elected an extra from Home Alone 2.
Yeah. Right.
That's what I'm trying to get you to laugh at. I want you to laugh at the fact that this is where we are as a society. Because if I told any of you guys in the 90s that Donald Trump was going to be president one day, y'all would have laughed at me. That's what I'm trying to get you to laugh at. I don't care if he did a good job or not.
Even when they did his roast on Comedy Central, it was already being rumored he was thinking about running, and everyone's like,
"Exactly,
get the fuck out of here."
Exactly, I'm trying to get you to laugh at the hilarity of where we are as a society. Your personal views on him and America, that is, I don't tap into any of that because I don't feel I, as a Canadian, have the right to tell a country how to vote. I'm not going to do that, right? So I don't tap into any of that. So that's why people respect it's how you present the argument. So if I'm going to talk about Asians, I'm going to speak about them intelligently enough where Asian people in the audience are laughing. I have a joke about there was one time there was an Asian woman sitting in the front and she was with a white guy. And I said, "You have nothing to worry about, ma'am. I don't make fun of Asians at all." And everybody assumed I was talking about the whole Asian hate thing. And I was like, it has nothing to do with that. I'm not going to make fun of you because I saw an Asian dude fight a white guy. It was the best 3 minutes of my life. And people just start laughing. And she starts laughing. I go, yeah, because when an Asian says, "Please, sir, I don't want any trouble," you should run. You should run for your life. And everyone just starts laughing. Yeah. Yeah.
What about if they say it a second time, Trix?
So I tell a story about how. So I tell the story, and I've seen the joke. Obviously,
I'm setting you up, man.
Yeah. So by the time I get to the punchline, she's laughing because people are understanding that I'm not poking fun at her culture, but I'm making fun of the ridiculousness of the stereotype of her culture. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. And then she in turn appreciates that. She's like, yeah, it is silly how we view Asians like that. But if I can get you to see that through jokes, then I've done my job. So it's how you present it. If you come out attacking and be like, yo, Asians are this and that, and they can't drive, then you might get some backlash. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But
here's the thing that I've always noticed about jokes and joke writing with a lot of the best out there. It's the absurdity of the situation and bringing it forward rather than just being a straight up fucking racist. Mm. You know what I mean? With the statement, the absurdity of it and how you present it is what makes it funny.
Yeah,
and if you can't understand absurdity and comedy, then you're at the wrong fucking show.
There was a risque joke I did about because I don't really touch religion. I don't really touch groups. I don't touch gay, lesbian. I don't touch those things because I feel like I said, if I can't speak intelligently about it, then I'm just not going to touch it. But there was a risque joke I did about the gay community. Mm-hmm. And again, comics are always like, I don't know if you should do that. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the joke, I had a lesbian couple who are notorious for coming up to comics and be like, "I don't like that you did this and this." But they came up to me and they were like, "Listen, we laughed our ass off so hard
at what you said." Won over the lesbian Karens.
And I'm not going to lie to you, that felt good because that proves that if you just listen, you just listen to what I'm saying, and just put your bias aside. If you can just listen to what I'm trying to empower you by showing you how absurd it is to view something this way. Let's laugh at it. Let's just laugh at it. And if you get people to that place, they're going to enjoy you more. You know, I've never been attacked. I've never been, you know, attacked by any group saying, "Yo, Trix is this and that. You know, he did a joke about this. We should cancel him." Because if you listen to the things I'm saying, I'm not attacking anybody, man.
That's brilliant, man. That's mastery. That's genius. Congrats.
Trix, every time we have a comedian on this show, I tell them that my guilty pleasure in life is watching comics bomb. I love it. It's the greatest thing in the world to me. I used to go to comedy clubs just to watch people bomb. The one painful thing I've never shared on air.
That's why they watch this show.
It's painful.
The one thing I've never shared publicly, though, that I will share right now is one of the reasons why I love this so much is because many years ago when I was maybe 18 or 19 years old, I was at Yuck Yuck's Comedy Club with a whole bunch of friends, and it was an amateur night, and they were basically daring people to come up on stage. So my friends just pushed me up to the stage, and it was always a bucket list item for me to do a comedy set, but I had nothing prepped. So I just did a couple jokes that I knew, and it bombed. My only saving grace was this is my only saving grace was a woman got up during the set and she was leaving. I was like, "Where the fuck you think you're going?" And she's like, "I'm going to the bathroom." I'm like, "Okay, you go to the bathroom, I'll go back to bombing." So she leaves and she comes back, it seems like really fast, like maybe a minute and a half later. I'm like, "You're done already?" And she's like, "Yeah." And now everyone's staring at her, right? I'm making her real uncomfortable. Was it one or two? She's like, "None of your business." I'm like, "Whatever you did, you didn't wash your hands. It was too quick." Right. And she's like, Yes, I did. I'm like, "Oh, you did? What color's the soap?" She froze. Like, and the crowd went, they all fucking mocked her. And I'm like, "I'm out."
Yeah, you gotta leave.
Leave on a high, bro.
Leave on a high, man.
But that being said, because I was subjected to the horror of bombing, I just want to ask you quickly, do you have a bombing story?
Do you want a bombing story of me?
Yeah. No, you.
I did bomb. I remember maybe my second year in, I bombed in Boston. And then I vowed to come back, which I did, and triumphantly conquer Boston. But the reason why I bombed was just, it was just my ego that made me bomb. So, I'm watching a comic, and the comic had a similar bit. Now, second year comedy tricks doesn't understand that. Okay, at this time, I don't know how to call audibles yet. I'm stuck in my set, and I remember it was a generic joke. It was about Nintendo. It was about blowing the Nintendo. And in my infinite ego, I thought my joke was better.
Okay.
So he does his joke, and you know me now. If somebody does a joke that's similar to something I have, I just take it out of my set, period.
Because I
got enough material where I could funnel something else. But second year, ego tricks, thinking, oh, my shit's way better, man. I'm from Toronto. I don't care about none of these people. So I go up, and I hit him with my joke. And you could literally see everybody going, yo, did we just hear this shit?
Right.
You could literally hear people saying that. Right. And here's the thing about bombing. Here's the thing about bombing that hurts. I would prefer to be booed, because at least when you're booing me, it's a reaction.
Yeah. Right. Silence is the killer.
But when the silence is, oh no, this is the killer. When they start having conversation during the that hurts. I'd rather you just boo me and tell me to get off the stage.
If you're still paying attention.
So I hit him with the Nintendo hook, and you can hear him like, yo, this, yo, we just heard this, bro. And Americans they'll say that out loud. We just heard this shit, bro. And especially black people. Black people are loud. We just heard this shit, bro.
Yeah.
So now I'm on stage and I'm like, oh God. So I hit him with another joke, crickets. So bad I go to my closer early. This is when you know a comic's bombing. When they go to their closer early, I go to the closer. This is the one that's supposed to get the people. Crickets. And I still got like 5 more minutes left. And you can hear somebody, the artist, go, somebody needs to get this nigga off the stage. And I'm just like, yeah. So my parents are one girl's like, we don't care about your parents.
Oh,
and I'm just like, oh my God. And they're just everything I'm saying, you're just hearing, we don't care. I'm like, yeah. So and then I would hit him with a punchline, and that's why they fell off the shelf.
Right.
I say that's why they fell off the shelf.
Yeah.
And everyone's just like, so eventually
Donnie's loving it.
Now here is where the boo hurts. This is where the bomb hurts the most.
Okay.
Now everyone's full out talking. There's conversations everywhere. Sure. The worst is when the promoter comes to the stage. When the promoter goes, hey, all right, that's
right.
Like, and you have like 5 more minutes left, that's when you're like, okay, yeah, my name is Trix, good night. And like, you get the Randy Watson clap, you know what I'm talking about? When you get the Randy, bro, I'm coming to America. It's funny because I'm coming to America, that shit's funny as hell. But when that shit happens to you, that shit hurts, bro.
Yeah,
it really does, bro. When a room full of people, you just, that hurts, bro. So
Donnie is loving that set though, so it's got its
oh,
got
my
amazing.
God.
That's the best.
And I remember the worst about it is being in the ride home. All the other comics did well except me. Ooh. So everyone's talking, you know, breaking down the set. And then I'm like, I'm not gonna lie, I wanted to quit comedy at that point. I was like, I'm
really
done. Yeah, it hurt. It really does.
What got you back up? Because that's a big deal. That sounded like a bad bomb.
I'm from Toronto, bro. I'm from Toronto, and
nobody.
I'm not saying Toronto's the best.
No,
but
I love that answer.
We cannot. There's no way I could come back to my city and be like, "Yeah, man, I went to Boston, and the man didn't like me, so I'm not doing it no more." Everybody in Toronto's like, "What are you talking about, bro? You're going back to Boston, bro."
Yeah.
I have friends that are like so scarred, but like, "Yo, fam, you're going back to Boston."
Yeah, yeah.
And when you go back to Boston, you're gonna taunt them in their face with beer jokes, bro. What are you talking about? That's right. You have to have that dude in your crew that's like, "No, I don't want to hear that, Trix. You're thumping man in the face next time you go to boxing.
Bad jokes.
So I 10 years later, I went back to Boston 10 years later and destroyed.
Nice.
Because obviously 10 years later, I'm a way better comic than I was.
Did you even bring that up in the set?
Absolutely.
You did, eh? Yeah.
Yeah. At the end, when they were all cheering, I was like, yeah, last time I was here, y'all booed me. Yeah. I was like, yeah, last time y'all booed me, that's never again. And I dropped the mic. Yeah. Walked off.
Nice.
I want to pull the move that Russell Peters shared on this show, which is when someone bombs, you clap them up like they murdered. And when they kill, you just be like,
wasn't that funny, bro? Yeah, you know what's funny? Comics do bust each other's balls like that. I think it's hilarious when they do it, though.
When I do fulfill my bucket list and decide to do a set somewhere, Tricks, I'm calling you as a ghostwriter, okay?
I'll say this, and because I was scared to do comedy. You know what I'm saying? I was scared. Like, I had that same vibe as you. Where did Danny go? Wi-Fi kick out?
Maybe. He's the man the technology hates. We'll see.
What happened to Danny?
He Irish goodbye to everybody right there.
Yeah, you gotta pay your tennis bill, bro. So so what I say to you is this: everything's a win-win. You understand what I'm saying? When it's your first time, everything's a win-win. Because if you go up and you suck and you really want to do this, you're gonna watch and see what you did wrong, and you're gonna make sure that doesn't happen again. Mm. So that's a win. If you kill, you're gonna want to do that again. So you're gonna watch what you did so that you can become better, so you keep killing. So everything's a win-win. You should never look at anything as a loss. Okay. So you have nothing to lose if you go up there. If you go up there and you suck, you just get better. You don't have nothing to prove, especially early. You're early in your career. No one's expecting you to do well. Mm. So everything is a win-win when you do comedy for the first time.
It's like you got to have those moments in order to make sure that you can grow and build from them and become better.
Nobody good did not bomb. No good comic doesn't have a bomb story.
Right.
No one. Chappelle's been moved.
If they say they don't, they've bombed really bad and they're lying about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Everybody has a bomb story. Everybody.
Tricks, thanks so much, man.
Man.
Shout out your socials real quick so people know where to get at you.
Yeah, man. Comedian Tricks on IG. Tricks is here on TikTok. 2 X's when you spell Tricks, man. Much love to you, Danny. Appreciate y'all. Chris, yes, Tidwell, much love to you, my brother. And Donnie, when you do comedy, man, I want to be there, bro.
All right. I'm a masochist. I got to try it. Just like I told Dan, I want to put out a rap album just to say I did.
Yeah, that's his department. His department. Talk to him.
And then I'm gonna join a heavy metal band, and Tid's gonna teach me how to drum. I'm just gonna do everything.
See, I'll be there to boo you every time.
I'll only teach you how to die in a bar crash. Like, that's pretty much it. Like...
And on that note. Thank you so much, Tricks the Comedian.
Yeah, oh, much love, bro. Much love to you guys.
That is my bro, Danny O. That is Notorious T.I.D., Chris Tidwell. My name is Donnie Da Silva. This is episode 63. We are done this party. Yes, sir. Godfathers of Podcasting.com. Get our merch. Check us out. Check our archives. Sorry to the people that were watching on IG and the visuals were all fucked up. We'll see if we can fix it. But stick with us, folks. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you get podcasts, you can check out this show. We've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. We will see you next time.
Yes, sir.
All right.